Welcome back to Dare to Feel. I'm your host, Alexandra Roxo, creative, artist, best-selling author of Fuck Like a Goddess, transformational and spiritual mentor and coach, and author of my new book, Dare to Feel. This series is based on that book, and in each episode, we'll deepen into topics around intimacy, relationships, spirituality, healing, and beyond. In today's episode, I talked to my friend, my soul brother from another mother, the illustrious, delicious Sadi Simone. We talk about relationship, intimacy, connection, loneliness, and so much else on this podcast. I love this podcast. I love Sa, and I hope you enjoy it just as much as I did. Hi, everybody. It is my pleasure to be sitting today with one of my best friends who's been on my podcast before on the Holy Fuck version and now is here on the Dare to Feel version. I am happy to have Sa DeSimone with us here today. So I am going to roll out the red carpet by reading his bio, which is so delicious and sparkling. As a kinesthetic learner, Sa danced into trance states since 2015, developing an understanding of the body-mind connection. This kinesthetic learning process inspired the formulation of his unique and critically acclaimed somatic activated healing method. His trauma-informed approach is informed by his grassroots work in orphanages, homeless shelters, and rehab centers in Indonesia, Nepal, India, and the U.S. Sa is currently extending his services to the Cedars-Sinai Hospital, the number two care center in the USA, undergoing training in clinical pastoral education and offering spiritual care to patients in the oncology, end-of-life, and rehab units. He is also a guest teacher at Columbia University. Sa's remarkable contributions to homeless youth in Venice Beach, California, earned him the CARE Award from the City and County of Los Angeles. Despite his impressive professional journey and achievements, what truly defines Sa is his courage and resilience. From a young age, his life has been marked by battles with depression, anxiety, and addiction. Yet his unwavering will to keep living and helping others truly signifies his luminary impact in the fields of spirituality and trauma healing. Oh my gosh, I'm like crying over here, just feeling so touched to have known you through the journey and from the beginning of your journey and in all of these different iterations. And just what I am so impressed by is that you have had opportunities to work with people like being flown around the world by like Kanye West and Kim Kardashian and being traveling and teaching with Deepak Chopra and all of these things. And yet here you are not getting stuck in that. Not that that would have been a bad journey. It would be amazing. But instead, you have continued to give your gifts in places where you are of deep service to communities that need you. And that is a true role model for, I think, anyone working in the wellness space, is how do we continue to extend our gifts outward? And you're doing it. And so I'm so proud of you. And I'm so happy to have you here to talk about your new book, Spiritually We. Welcome, Sa.
Oh my goodness. Thank you. And it's true. We've been around the block together. We have been around the block. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for you feeling moved by the progression of my expression. It's so beautiful to be witnessed like that, especially by someone that I admire, that I'm inspired by, someone who is actively participating in my day-to-day life. Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because like I started out my journey doing a lot of work, for it's service work, you know, and always having that be a part of my gifts since I was in college. And when I got into like a few years, and look, I'm going to ask Sa a question. This isn't going to be about me, but I'm just saying real quick, when I got into like that wellness space, I kind of forgot my service for a while. And I was just like giving to the people, which is a service, fully 100% giving to the people who were paying me for coaching or classes or retreats. And then I was like, wait a minute. I used to do this stuff for free for tons of people. I did workshops in homeless shelters in New York. I mentored youth. And then last year, I was like, I got to get back on this train. And so I did some work in Boulder doing workshops at a home for mothers and babies who are unhoused. I told Eli the other day, my partner, I said, we need to be doing work for the greater community at large, however that, you know, whatever that looks like here where we live now. And I'm so glad you're doing that, because you and my friend Shannon, who is also mentioned in my book, you guys are both mentioned in my book, Dare to Feel. You're the people that I know currently that are prioritizing, making your gifts go further than, let's say, a community of people that can afford to pay however $100 for a session. So I'm just so glad that you're doing that and you're sharing about that. Let's talk about your book. Oh my God. Congratulations.
Thank you. What a journey this book was. Holy shit. Like, oh my God. It was so hard to write. Not the material wasn't hard to get it out of me, because I feel like it was like needing to come out. It was coming out, but I wrote it during such a hard season of my life. You know?
What was it about the season of your life that A, inspired you to write Spiritually We, and what was it about the season that made it a difficult time but an important time to write it?
Well, two things come to mind. One, it was kind of like a social, it was like almost like a response to what I was hearing online. So many people would comment in every area of my social media platforms. It would say, I wish I had a best friend like you. I want to have a friend like you. I'm so lonely. I want to have a friend like you. Be my best friend. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. Like, I do have a capacity to engage with people really easily. And I do prioritize connection. And so part of this like social experiment of writing this book was like responding to what the community was asking for. So that was one side. And then the other side, which was the most evident, the most transformational, the most eye-opening, was the fact that I could not have gotten through the last year of my life if it wasn't for you, if it wasn't for my core group of friends, because you guys flew to LA, texted, called, sent things, were always available. When my mother died, I went into one of the deepest, darkest holes of my life, physiologically unwell, psychologically disoriented, and spiritually kind of confused. Like, how is it that moms die? How is it that we're supposed to do life without our mother? I was so confused. I mean, as a Buddhist, we know samsara, right? This realm is poorly designed. This realm, and I know for other faiths, some people feel triggered when I say this, but for the Buddhist faith, which is the faith that I practice, samsara, it's, inherently flawed. And anything in here will never lead to sustainable happiness, will always keep us in a perpetual state of seeking more, wanting more. So samsara, back to mom. Having lost mom, I was like, oh shit, the Buddha was right. Like, it is a plane of suffering. It is always going to be, pain is inevitable. But if it wasn't for the friendships, if it wasn't for the community, I could not have gotten through this time. So writing the book through this period was like so evident that I had done something right. I'm not a master by no means, but some wisdom was developed and embodied in me that I was able to put in the pages of this book, which is about the importance of friendship, the importance of connection, the importance of being socially integrated.
Okay. So one thing that I love about the book and something you just mentioned here is like that we all need those inner circle of people who show up when we're in the trenches. And there's something I want to read from your book that really struck me. which was the question, how do we determine who those people really are? That inner circle should comprise the people you can trust with your deepest self, your insecurities, and your triggers. They know your story and won't manipulate it later to use it against you. I like to think of these five people as being those who can hang with you in the plane of secrets, which I love. That plane of existence where your mistakes, the ways you've hurt yourself, the ways you've hurt others can't be hidden. It's the place where you can show up disheveled, feeling horrible, looking crazy, and let your burdens down without fear of judgment or rejection, where your secrets are held safe. These inner circle five have this capacity because they also want the same things out of life that you do. They likely have their own ways of getting there, but they strive to be compassionate to others. They want to be of benefit to others. They also want to not be the same person today that they were yesterday. It continues, but I love that part because you're telling us how we know if somebody is meant to be in our inner circle. Talk to me about what is this inner circle? How many people can we really have in our plane of secrets? What is that plane of secrets? And how do we choose these people? Because this is a huge question for people. Nowadays, when we have access to people in our network all around the country, we often have many friendships that aren't as deep, but we're yearning for the depth. So how do we find that inner five? And how do we define those people? And just talk to me about that.
There's so much to unpack here. That's such a juicy chunk you read, the plane of secrets. When I was putting this together, I was like, that's what that is. It's the plane of secrets. So I just want to open up a little wider for context. So this inner five, this inner core group, it comprises of five people, right? And it's based on the Dunbar research. And we open up wider to understand that based on this scientific research, we only have the cognitive ability of knowing 150 people.
Is that true?
With social, isn't that insane?
That
insane how like it goes against everything that we are, social media tells us, you know, more followers, more happiness, and more like all this like stuff that doesn't make any sense. That's like, as Dr. Rachel Wooserman speaks about it in the book too, she says it's like Wonder Bread, you know, it tastes so good.
Empty
you feel
calories.
A little bit high from it, empty calories. And then you immediately like fall back from the crash. That's what social media engagement is like. And to use her language, it's like eating Wonder Bread. I love that. So Dunbar speaks about 150 people, and that comprised of the people who will come to your once in a lifetime event, funerals, weddings. And then it goes a little deeper to the 50. Those are the big birthday bash, housewarming party, these kinds of things. And then goes to the 15. 15 is where we have access to people who will babysit your kid, who will, you know, help you when you need it in deep and meaningful ways, right? If you need somebody to, babysitting is a great example, but if you need someone to house sit, or if someone is sick, or you, I mean, there's a variety of ways that we constantly need help that we're not naming it. So those 15 people are people that you know well, and they know you very well. And then there's the layer deeper, which is the five, the core five. So looking out, 150, 50, 15, and the five. And I speak about this in detail in the book based on Dunbar's research. The core five is what you brought up, which is the this inner circle and the plane of secrets. It's where we have the friendship, the bond, the connection with people that will never, as we spoke about in the book, manipulate your story. Will never bring up something that you've done in the past towards yourself or towards other people and manipulate it to hurt you even more. And the plane of secrets, which is a really important aspect of this, is a place where I speak about this in a book too. Rumi speaks about the field of where right or wrongdoing dissipate. It disappears. There's no right or wrong. It's not that what you've done wrong or what you've done right doesn't have, there's no accountability. It's just when you're deepening connection with someone, when you are establishing the plane of secrets with somebody, this is where you're able to meet in the place of non-duality, where right or wrong falls away, where good or bad falls away. And we all have, and the only way to arrive at this place is when you have met your own darkness. This is what I was coming up to say. It's only way that you can gift the plane of secrets to another person is when you have met your own darkness, when you've looked at your own mistakes without shaming yourself, without like pathologizing yourself, without harming yourself for having harmed. You can have compassion that we make mistakes, that we cause harm. So that plane is a place that can only happen in friendship when both parties, or in this context, the group of five, have all done that work of meeting their darkness, of looking through their biography and saying, okay, I've caused harm to the world. I've caused harm to myself. I have been harmed. And we're no longer allowing these bits and pieces of our story to be the definition of our biography. Mm-hmm. So the plane of secrets is vital. We know really well when we are with a friend that can hang out with us in that plane, where they're able to listen to us, and we just, it's a knowing. It's like, we don't need their pity. We don't need them to say, oh, it's not that bad. We don't need them to diffuse or emphasize how good you are. No, it's just a knowing. There's something about their presence. Right. There's something about their eyes. There's something about the energy that you guys create together. We all know these people in our lives.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What I love about that is just like, that feels like family, but it's different than family. Family has a lot of connotation. A lot of us have had trouble with our families, but there is this familiar feeling, right? Where it's like, yeah, I can cozy up on the couch with you, whether it's literally or metaphorically, I can cozy up on the couch with you and just relax. And I can, like you said in the book, something like, look what I just read. You said you can like show up disheveled, looking crazy, again, metaphorically or more emotionally, mm-hmm, or, you know,
but how many times you and I have ungowned, fully disheveled, fully, you know, like we've just been in a couch, like,
yeah,
like, you know,
I was just thinking even of when, you know, before I had my baby, some friends came to give a blessing way and three of my inner circle stayed at my house with me. And it was like all of us in one house. And but there was just such an ease because, there's no pretense. There's no, I need to make you feel at home or I need to take care of you or whatever. It's like, I know you'll take care of yourself. I know there's an ease there. Okay. But what about the people that are listening and like, well, how the hell do I find these type of people? Because I do hear that also. And you heard it via your social media. Like, and this touches into the theme that you also touch in your book about the loneliness epidemic. So let's talk about the loneliness epidemic, because those numbers really struck
scary.
Me. Yeah. The statistics there. And,
yeah,
you know, and then let's try to also offer how, what you do in the book, how can people find their spiritual friendships, their mm-hmm. garden, you know, and the garden mm-hmm. of their spiritual friendships that you also put so beautifully mm-hmm. in the book. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the statistics first.
Yeah.
It is alarming where we're at as a society, right? Research shows that over 60% of young adults have reported feeling seriously lonely, which is alarming, right? If you go into a room of, you know, 10 people, six of those are feeling deeply lonely, even though we have people around us. Now, another set of statistics, 2 out of 5 people report that their friendships, that their connections, that their relationships are not meaningful. So again, if you're around 5 people, 2 of those people who are in that room with you, perhaps in that dinner party, feel like their relationships are not meaningful, that those people don't have their backs, that those people are not tickling their hearts, those people are not inspiring them, that they can't hang out in the plane of secrets with them. Right. And then the scariest of them all is that suicide has increased by 30%. So it's so mind-blowing, all of this. So now we have the statistics, right? Now let's talk about
suicide the need has for increased, connection. Hold on a second. Has increased since when?
Is it I have like, all these statistics in a book.
Okay.
It's recent, right? Yeah.
It's recent.
Like, yeah. All these statistics I mentioned to you guys, it's within the last few years.
Okay, cool.
It's not like, yeah. It's in comparison.
Yeah, which I've read about too in relationship to social media and kids being on their phone and people in general being on their phones so much that they think it's connection, but they're actually not getting meaningful connection. And so they feel more lonely than they did before because then now they're looking at how everyone else has whatever. Anyway, side note.
It's the Wonder Bread thing that Dr. Rachel Wooserman, who I speak to in the book, talks about. It doesn't nourish. It's not sustainable. It always leads to a crash. Right. Now, one other thing that we have to talk about too is that the need for connection, that loneliness is a cue that we're actually missing something that is biologically vital for our well-being. Mm-hmm. This is like the biggest thing I think that most people don't understand. Hunger, loneliness is a cue like hunger. The same way that we feed ourselves when we're hungry, loneliness has that biological alarm in the same way. However, what do we do when we feel lonely? We watch TV, we masturbate, we smoke, we drink, we scroll on social media. We do anything we can to distract ourselves from feeling. We do anything we can to act upon that biological need for connection.
Right.
And because of social media, and I'm not an anti-social media person, I'm just anti-consuming your life. Because of social media, our muscle for connection, our muscle for being socially integrated, for reaching out and saying, okay, I'm hungry for connection. I'm lonely. Let me put on a look. Let me smell really fucking good and let me go to the place where I can meet some people. Where that muscle is atrophied. It's been severed. We don't have the capacity to engage with that muscle group. And I'm speaking metaphorically here because of social media. It's robbed us of the capacity to do that.
Yeah.
And every time loneliness strikes and we don't act upon it, it literally builds more and more blocks around your capacity to ever listen deeply and know, oh, yeah. I am so lonely. Right. And the loneliness is actually calling for deep, nourishing connection. Not right. the 150, not the 50, but the 15 and the 5.
Right.
Those people who got you. Those people who are going to fly across the world to be with you when your mother dies. Those people who are going to fly across the country to be with you when your daughter is born. Yeah. That group of people. The 5 and the 15. Not to say that the 50 and the 150 are important, but we're looking, focusing more and more on the 15 than the 5.
Right.
So when we understand loneliness and friendship as a biological need, like feeding ourselves, it changes the game. Now, this should be, as we're talking about this, it should like raise the flag for people who are listening to when you feel lonely. Do you name it? What do you do with that feeling? What happens when? So just start to approach your inner world like a spiritual scientist, a somatic scientist of what's happening in my body. And what do I do when loneliness strikes? Oftentimes we distract, right? Mm-hmm. So very valuable and very necessary to understand that friendship is a biological need. And this leads me to another part where I speak about in the book, we are so afraid of the word need.
Oh, yes. Wait, I got a quote for this one. Because,
okay, go. Go, go,
because
go, go.
I also was so touched by this. And
we pathologize need. We say codependent. We literally are in the world of pathologizing anything, putting in one category a set of trauma responses from a really sick society. And it just makes us feel worse because we have a need for connection.
Is it really so wrong to need others? Personally, I think our disgust with need stems more from a fear of vulnerability than anything else. Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And this is vulnerability. And I talk about this in my book and I talk about this in my work with people and my coaching. It's like the vulnerability of texting a friend and saying, hey, I really could use a friend. I'm feeling so lonely or so sad. Do you have 15 minutes to hop on FaceTime or whatever? That when it, what happens, like you said, is when we start ignoring that, we become overly self-sufficient, or we, you know, use all of those different coping mechanisms. And then when we actually want, when connection or love actually shows up, then oftentimes we're so used to not leaning into it that we reject it, we push it away. That's the painful part. And that's, I talk about this in my book too. And this is why I love that our books are sort of on the same train, is that it's like the thing that we want, if we train ourselves out of it, like you said, if we start ignoring it, it's the same with hunger. We train ourselves out of listening to that cue for connection or cue for actual nourishment. Then when it's in front of us, we don't know how to receive it anymore.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Mic drop for you right there. Well done. That's so beautiful. Yeah. The word need comes with, it's so loaded,
yeah.
You know, and what we should start to realize is how often do we refrain from naming a biological, psychological, spiritual need like connection because we're afraid of sounding needy, of sounding not self-sufficient, or sounding like we're not self-made. Self-sufficient and self-made, these are lies. These are flawed realities. They do not exist. There's nothing in our life that we create from our own sides independently. This is not a Buddhist truth. This is a period truth. Like, it's so insane that we live that the capitalistic world makes us believe that we can do it alone, that we have to do it alone, that we can do it by ourselves. We are allowing what's happening in our society, in our very, very well, very, very sick society, to permeate our psyches, to permeate our bodies, to close off our hearts. You know, really eye-opening, the word need. And I encourage you to see if you can message some people and friends that you're starting to build a relationship and say, hey, I need some connection time. I need to see you. You know, I need to see you.
Yeah.
Like, to see what happens. To me, I always smile. It always softens my heart. It always relaxes my nervous system.
Do you have people that do that for you?
Yeah, of course.
Do you send those texts?
Yeah.
Do you send those texts?
Of course I do.
I have to admit, I have trouble sending an I need you text.
Trust me, we know.
Oh, shit!
We know, honey. We know that you are willing, you are unconsciously, because of your lived experience, you try to do it all alone, you know, as a protection mechanism. And, you know, we talk about it and we're like, why does Roxa doing that again? You know?
Totally called out. And yes, people they know this about me because I've revealed it in my books.
But
I'm working on it. And I feel like for me, and maybe this will resonate with someone else listening, identifying the five that that I can do that with, and that I know these are the safe spaces that I can practice needing, right? That to me is really important, because otherwise I'm just kind of like, and I told this to, I said this, I was talking to one of our mutual close friends, and she, because it was something that I shared, was like, well, I don't know, I don't really have a line about like, well, what if I need them too much or what too small? So I kind of err on the side of caution. So you need people that you can practice with expanding beyond your edge. So that means that I have to practice, means like if you're somebody like me and it's really scary to send I need you text, you need a few people that if you go a little too far, they're going to still be a safe place, right? They're not going to just be like, oh, you're a freak. Because I have had that happen with friends, or it was like I started to let myself need them, and then they were like, oh, girl, that's too much. And they totally said goodbye to me. So. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you know, if you're a person that has a tendency like me, you know, find the people that if you do get rejected, that you know that they're still your friend and that you guys can still dialogue and you're not going to get like just ghosted by it.
And dive into the book, because there is a whole series of practices to help you identify the five.
Okay, that was like the plane of secrets.
Yeah, the plane of secrets is one aspect, which sounds kind of like, you know, esoteric and occult, the plane of secrets. But there's very specific things a series of practices that I put together in the book to help people identify who those five is. But you said something. Can I just jump in? I know you have a question, but can I say something about the people who like abandoned you or said, oh, girl, that's too much? This is all, it leads back to what I see so often. People cannot hang out with paradox. People cannot hang out with contradictory narratives. People cannot be in a plane of like, Alexandra is so generous and she's so strong and she also is needy per se. Let's use that for an example.
Like I have
people
needs.
People cannot, yeah. Or she's vulnerable.
Right.
Or she is able to express her needs more clearly than I am. And because her capacity to express her needs more than I do, if it closes me off, it shuts me down.
Right.
You know? So I think this is also something for people to understand too. In the book, I speak about this a lot, our inability to see people through a lens of paradox. Can this person be a little annoying in this area, but so amazing in this area? Can this person be this and that? In our world of today of cancellation of people, of toxic people, we are using these big words to describe a complex human being that one label could never encompass the entirety of all of our unmet needs, all of our unfulfilled prayers, all of our aspirations, all of our dreams, all of the things that everyone lives. We are walking through society blinded, unwilling, desensitized to the reality that everyone that you pass by is living very full lives.
Right.
That they also have mothers who die, that they're also trying to get pregnant, that they also have friends who rejected them, that they also have been called names, that they also have been bullied or they're bullied. Like everyone's got full lives. And that our inability to understand that cue, I need connection, which means what? The more you reject these somatic cues for you to, oh, I should reach out, I should engage. The more you reject what's going on in your body, that biological need for friendship, the more you're going to be unwilling to be sensitized to people's needs without them even having to say it. One thing that I speak about in the book too, the core five, they can hear pain without you having to say pain. They can hear suffering without you having to say suffering. I wasn't going to give some of these things away, but now we're talking about it. It's very important because so often we want the people in our lives to read our minds or we don't say the things because we expect them to read our minds, right? But you haven't welcomed them into your inner world enough and had conscious communication with them in a way that invites them in to get to know your inner world. And then you shut them out because they're not reading your mind, but you haven't even established an intimate connection to begin with. You know, is this making sense?
Totally, which requires that vulnerable reaching out. And this is, I mean, this is fascinating. I'll tell you more offline because this is a conversation that's been coming up in therapy for me. Quick little pause here. I want to introduce you to Groovy. They make non-alcoholic social beverages. They are award-winning for their craft beer and wine. We had their delicious dry Secco at the Dare to Feel book launch party at Contact Sports in New York City. It was delicious, perfect for a toast when you are feeling like going alcohol-free. You can buy Groovy at Whole Foods, Target, Total Wine, and more. All right, back into the podcast. Okay, I have another quote like that is a piggyback from this. And so here's the thing that I was considering. It's like, okay, so say we're trying to identify who our inner five is, who are the people that we want to be vulnerable with. And there's something that you talk about in the book about the people that trigger you. And this quote from the book, so many people I encounter online and IRL seek out only information and relationships that affirm and uphold their personal value and belief systems, even though those systems often go unexamined and even if they are unbalanced or broken. They willingly forfeit friendships with others because it's easier than facing their own blind spots or stepping out of their comfort zones. They build fortresses around themselves that are just as hard to escape as they are to penetrate, which is exactly what we were just talking about. So here's somebody that's listening. They want to cultivate spiritual friendships. They want to get vulnerable. They want to get real. But what happens when the triggers arise?
Well, let's unravel this, because this is like the ultimate question I think people have when it comes to connection.
Yes.
Triggers, the way that we have to understand triggers, a lot of the mechanisms, a lot of the emotional mechanics, a lot of our ways of relating to the world did not start with us. A lot of this predates you. A lot of this stuff has been living in your lineage. A lot of this stuff has been marinated and cooked into your lineage for God knows for how long. And you can look at from a purely empirical scientific perspective. There is enough research that shows that trauma lingers through chemistry. And you and I talked about this on the phone the other day, how workaholism and addiction is so much part of my lineage. No wonder why I've struggled with these things as well. Right? You can look at it from a purely scientific perspective. Now, looking from a spiritual perspective, you look at the natural law of karma. We do not come earthside with a clean blank slate. We arrive here with a backlog of stuff already. And through our environments, through our exchanges, through the people in our lives, these inner mechanics become exacerbated, and they become more developed and stronger and harder to undo and unwind, right? So the triggers are constantly showing you something that is literally about you. No one has the capacity to place a feeling inside of you. When we are starting the spiritual journey, we ended up having all these boundaries because we don't want to be around people, place, or things that trigger us. We want to protect our peace. But the idea of protecting your peace on the spiritual path doesn't exist, because it is a subject within personal development, not spirituality, right? Because in spirituality, you realize that nothing is personal. And because nothing is personal, meaning the way people relate to you, it's based on their ways, all the ways, all the stories, all the, you know, ways that they have imagined you to be. We never truly 100% understand each other, you know, fully. The core five are the ones that we can actually potentially arrive at a place where we truly get to know each other. But the vast majority of people in our lives, we're just hallucinating each other. We're just literally making up the versions of each other. We're literally, you know, imagining who they are based on what we have perceived them to be. And what is our perception based on all these inner mechanics that a lot of them didn't even start with us. So we don't have a clear perception of reality based on that, right? And now triggers being impersonal, because a lot of the stuff has been mommy and daddy and grandma and grandpa, all the ways that they have felt, and now you are feeling them too. And if you approach it from a perspective that all of it is a lesson showing you where you are still hooked, where you are still blind, then triggers are actually a beautiful lessons. They're beautiful ways for you to get to know, where am I still like unwilling to realize that my view of reality isn't the whole entire truth? You know, because triggers are constantly showing us that we are not the ones who hold the highest truth, that our little small perception isn't the ultimate perception. Triggers helps us to realize that that person has a perspective and it's valid, and your perspective is valid. But either of these perspectives, are they the highest truth? Oftentimes we realize that they're not, that they're like small-minded ways of perceiving reality. Am I making sense?
Yeah. So it's a little mind blowing. I love what you said about the hallucinating.
Because it's so true. It's so true. Like we go through our entire lives like hallucinating people, hallucinating versions of
just fully, a lot of
it's all in our minds, you know? Fully projecting onto people, place, and things what we want it to be. And oftentimes it's not.
Yeah.
Oftentimes it's very, very much not. And it hurts us because we want it to be.
So what happens then when we have a potential new friendship, a potential for connection, and we get triggered, right? Somebody sees straight into us, or they say like, wow, that's interesting that you do that. Or maybe they, whatever it is, or maybe they do something that reminds us of our parents and it brings up our core wound or whatever. And a common thing nowadays would be to be like, ah, and run in the opposite direction, right? Like, so
that's right.
So how do we deal with this? And especially in the current climate that we're in, how do we have the courage to face those triggers and not look at friendships as disposable, but, and how do we know whether it's worth it, right? We talked about this before, you and I separately, but like, how do we know whether it's worth it? Because I want to know. Mm-hmm. Tell me, Simone.
Whether it's worth it or not, only you know based on examining, right? Only you know based on examining, based on like you could do those sets of practices on the book and it'll help you. Now, when it comes to triggers, you have to, the chapter in the book is learning to see in the dark.
Okay.
It's actually knowing how to feel your feelings in your body as they happen. How to actually like engage with someone as you're triggered while feeling your feelings. Like, how do you master that? That's massive work. That's what's being emotionally intelligent is about. That's what being on a spiritual path is about. Can I engage with the outer reality while being responsible for what's going on inside of me? So often a feeling strikes the body and the mind runs wild with stories about that feeling. We conceptualize, we pathologize, we criticize, we reject, or we blame. I feel this way because of you. That's like the quintessential way that relationships end. I feel this way because of you. You are the perpetrator,
right?
The sole cause of my misery. We perceive that people have the capacity of placing a feeling inside of you that was there to begin with, right? We spoke about this earlier.
Yeah.
So the way to go about this is truly learning, how could I arrive because it's taking me 10 fucking years to arrive here. But the truth is, it's how could I practice being in my body so grounded and so peacefully and so gracefully to know that feelings are neither good or bad. They're just passing sensations in the body, right? And they're not necessarily our messengers of the highest truth per se.
Right.
You know, I think oftentimes we want feelings to have meaning. And the meaning is what the mind tells us about it. But what if you started to interpret like what triggers you in relationship to that person or in that exchange? What if you just realized that feeling in that moment, what if it didn't have some grand, big meaning? What if it was just calling you to be in your body? What if it was just calling you to be more present? What if it was just calling you to actually like learn the inner workings of your inner world? What if it's just calling you to take a deep breath? Like, what if it wasn't really about the other person? What if it was really just about you and your body asking, please inhabit me.
Yeah.
Stop hovering life.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Stop being disembodied. Stop narrating life and not experiencing life. Stop doing life and not being in life. You know, what if it was that? Like the exploration of this in the book, we speak about it a lot. The only way to see feelings, to start to interpret the message that feelings can gift us after they pass, to get to that point where feelings leave us messages after they leave the body, we first have to be able to engage with reality and all of our feelings without duality,
right?
Without taking everything personal, without perceiving that I feel this way about this person. Oh, it's a bad feeling. Oh, this is a bad person.
Right.
Like,
but how do we know once we've been triggered? Let's say, okay, we're triggered by somebody who we want to be friends with and we're confused and we're like, okay, I really like this person, but I keep getting triggered by them because let's say they don't text me back, right? For like 2 weeks or something like that, which I
conscious communication. Conscious communication.
So what
conscious communication. Whole chapter on the book about it. What it looks like is actually one of the most vulnerable things we can do.
Yeah.
I say two things happened with 10 years of practice for me. I feel deeply connected to all of life, not all the time, but most of the time. And I'm actually able to have hard conversations. So conscious communication will look like this. When this happens, I feel this. And when I feel this, I think this. And when I think this, I want to say these things or I want to do these things.
Right.
You know, that chain of events,
yeah.
The circuit of feel, think, react by speaking or by doing. You have to invite somebody else into your inner world. When you don't text me back, I feel
right.
rejected. When I feel rejected, I think about all the times that I was rejected. And then I want to tell you to fuck off. And I go and I smoke a pack of cigarettes.
Ooh.
Like, show someone
right.
their your inner world.
Right.
This is how you end. This is how you end the paranoia. This is how you end the hallucination. Right. This is how you end your projection. This is how you arrive at that plane where you have now bonded deeply.
Wow.
I've had to send I've had to send messages like this to friends where like, I love that we hang out and it's always so deep and meaningful and I need more.
And so, but where do you draw the line then? Of like, yes, you can be open and vulnerable and honest and da 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 da. But what if that person can't meet you there or doesn't want to meet you in that level of depth, right?
Then next. Then thank you very much. Love you, mean it. Next.
Okay.
Yeah. But first.
But first, this is the most right? important thing. Is not disposable friendships. This isn't just ghost everybody who does.
Exactly. It's not the first time. It's not like, oh, I right. try to have that one hard conversation with them. I let them know that I feel and I think I react in this way. And I let them into my whole inner world. Yada, yada, yada. And I did it one time. They did not meet me there. Bye. No.
No. Like, right. You give it a few tries.
Give it a few times,
yeah.
you know, and then just allow like patience.
Yeah.
But I
and
think
sitting in the unknown
thing,
in between, right? Because like while you're
that's
not
right.
sure,
that's
I mean,
right.
we could say the same that's for right. dating, right? It's like while you're not sure if that person's going to meet you in a deep place of love, you have to
yeah.
sit in the uncomfortable place of the unknown
yeah.
where
yeah.
you're like,
yeah.
are they going to be my yeah. friend or foe? Are they going to be my girlfriend, boyfriend, lover
yeah.
or not? Right. And that's
yeah.
the hard
that's right.
part for people like us.
Yeah.
No, I'm
yeah.
just kidding.
Literally, the unknown is extremely hard and the unknown has messages for us. Every time we are in the unknown, the body is actually like their messages, their feelings surfacing. There are needs arriving. Like
yeah.
if you're actually able to be in the unknown without distracting yourself, you will learn a lot about yourself. You will
right.
learn that perhaps there are more areas of your life that need to change, that perhaps you're wanting to be in a romantic partnership right now is another way that you are avoiding having hard conversation with your best friends, avoiding calling your mother back, avoiding speaking up your needs, avoiding all these things.
Right.
Like the time of unknown in whatever era of our lives is so sacred because it shows us what we are unwilling to love, what we're unwilling to address.
Right.
You know?
Right.
There's, go ahead. But I just want to say just one more thing real quick. I think it's oftentimes when you address, when you have that vulnerability and you invite someone to that deep place with you, oftentimes they will show a part of themselves that it's new for you, that can really bring you closer together.
Yeah.
And then other times you have a deep, meaningful conversation and then you really realize that like, that's enough. You know, I have a friend who I really like through the years, I never liked them. I was like, oh my God, they're so this, they're so that, they're so this, superficial, vain, blah, 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 all things about myself that I wasn't loving about myself, right? I got to meet them and hung out with them and I was like, oh, they're deep. Oh, they're not as shallow and as vain as I thought they were. They're deep. Okay, cool. Love it. Sweet. All right. Let's try to engage. We hung out a few times and we made plans and then the plans fizzled. I was like, okay, cool. No worries. And then when we see each other at parties or in events or something, it's always deep connection and really meaningful. And then the next day, I'm like, oh, I really want to reach out to them and see them again. And then pause, breathe. Do I really want to or not? And in that pause, in that breath, in that somatic awareness of what's going on in your body, you realize, no, I don't need to. Because the most important thing that we need to realize is that unless we cultivate these core five, we are going to die alone and we're not going to have a meaningful, sustainable life. And connection is the most important thing we have in our lives. This book is not, it's not a book that's, I'm not writing it because we're coming off of a pandemic, and I'm not writing it because it's a cute topic. I'm writing it because it is a vital need, because we cannot, if the purpose of human life is to become enlightened, right? And enlightenment happens in relationship, right? It's relational. Liberation is relational. This is how important the book is. So right. If we want to reach that point of full liberation, we have to arrive at a point where we have good friends that we can be triggered with, yeah. that we can be uncomfortable with, that we can navigate these dark waters together,
right.
you know?
Right. Well, I love what you said too. And I'm excited for people to read in the book how to identify their top five, because not everybody's going to be your top five, and it's okay.
No.
It's not personal. Yeah. Not everybody's going to be your people. You know, we have these sacred soul contracts with different people. And so it's not that everybody you meet is going to fill that role. We can look at it through the lens of like karmic relationship, karmic contracts, things that we're meant to people we're meant to meet, and et cetera. And like, that's not going to be everybody. So we don't have to take it personally, right? Where it's like, oh, do I want to just like become besties with everyone? Is that my tendency? Instead of, like you said, sitting and taking a breath and noticing, you know, that's really, really beautiful. In terms of what sacred friendship is, what do you consider the sacred thread in friendship? And then I want to hear where you think people can meet these sacred friends, or the people that can meet them in some sort of a depth and a place where liberation can occur.
Mm-hmm. So sacred friendship is like a broad topic where the purpose of Spiritually Read the Book is for us to be a sacred friend to the world.
Okay.
The foundation of it is to enter the world and be able to connect with everyone's humanity, with everyone's benevolence, with everyone's goodness, which is a hard topic given the context of today's world, where our industrial prison complex says these people have caused all this harm. They're bad people. They need to be punished. And unless they're punished to this degree, they can never reenter society. And when you do reenter society, I'm always going to remember that you did that thing. So I'm constantly associating behavior with self. I can never dismantle self, you know, unstruck goodness, benevolent nature from someone's harmful behavior. Mm. So sacred friendship is, it opens you up to this wider view. Can I enter the world and engage with all people as souls on earth? As I talked to Dr. Lisa Miller on the book, can I genuinely see people as loving souls who are lost in the sauce sometimes, who are lost in their pain sometimes, who just like me make mistakes, who just like me want to be happy, who just like me don't want to suffer? So sacred friendship is this broader, wider umbrella that's really calling people to enter the world seeing the goodness in all people, even though we have our prejudice and our bias and all of the ways that we're colonized and indoctrinated to see people for their behavior. So a sacred friend is someone who's constantly dismantling behavior from self. Mm. Can I be in a room and see everyone as a soul on earth? And then Dr. Lisa Miller speaks about this too, that it's the same part of the brain when we can actually see people as souls on earth, same part of the brain that when we are connecting deeply with people, it's the same part of the brain that helps us to connect with the divine, with the higher power, same area in the brain. So deep connections are inherently spiritual. Mm. It's so beautiful to know this, that like the part of the brain that helps us to connect to God or to the deity or to the goddess or to whatever, that's this higher benevolent power that's weaved through everything, is alive and firing the same time we are connecting to people in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
So sacred friendship is a call to action that, can I enter today and walk through the supermarket and walk through the DMV and walk through wherever and be at a party and be at a workplace and see people for more than what meets the eye? Could I touch their soul? And you're going to feel what's happening neurochemically, you know, physiologically. We're strengthening that part of the brain that helps us to then see people and all of life through a spiritual lens, through this higher lens. It's you know, the work of these scientists that I spoke to in the book, it's amazing to see that we are missing our capacity to strengthen parts of our brain that helps us to see all of life through a spiritual lens, through a higher lens, through a benevolent lens, you know? And then your next question was, where do we find these people? Where do you want to be found? Ooh. Like, where would you like to be? Mm. You know, like my feedback about it is like, be where you want to be found.
That's
like,
so beautiful.
If you are, if you are on your couch, is that where you want to be found? Like, girl, come on. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
Like, literally.
Right.
Like, save up your money. Don't go on a drunk vacation again. You know, save up your money. Go on a retreat.
Right.
Every one of my retreats through all these years and in my membership and in your membership and your retreats, we hear the same thing. Oh my God, I met a friend for life.
People best friends, started businesses. People have met their lovers. Like, it's crazy. Like,
literally.
I told the women in my membership, I said, if I could use that, if that could have all of you guys be my real marketing, because the amount of love that they find in connection is so special. It's so special to me that that happens. And we have found that in our ways too. Like, maybe we didn't meet in a membership on a retreat, but we met through mutual shared interests, right? Like, we saw in each other.
Hey. Well, I saw it in you first, honey. I was like, oh my God, who is this legendary artist who's talking about spirituality, who's talking about psychodrama, who's embodying the spirit, this occult art, in this artistic, creative way? I hadn't seen anything like it. And I was like, I reached out to you. I was like, excuse me, who are you? Can we be friends? And then, you know, all of it unraveled.
And I was like, who is this hottie? He was super yogi back then. He was wearing his yoga whites, long hair, super skinny though. He had superfood bowl. And we all start somewhere, right? And it's like you and I, we were in a completely different zone of our careers, of our own journeys. And we've been able to sustain growing together. And I think that that's what happens when you meet spiritual friends and people, other people that are on the path, is that there's more capacity to grow together because there's an inherent understanding that we're going to transform, we're going to change, we're going to expand. Whereas when you meet people in other contexts, sometimes it's like, wait, you've changed as a person? You no longer fit in that little mold that they first started, you know, with you in. And that can be really devastating to people. I have a lot of people come into my communities, start changing, growing, expanding. They no longer resonate with their friends. You have the same people I know. And so when you meet people on the path, that's part of the special thing, is that there's an inherent acceptance that we are going to change, right? Like, that you would accept me if I say, like, okay, I'm doing this thing, or I'm moving here, or I'm studying this, or I'm no longer doing that, that you're like, yeah, cool. I'm honoring her journey. And so that's what I think is special about people investing in being friends and cultivating spiritual community, because you get to continue to grow and be yourself on the journey, right?
Yeah.
Even if you stayed yogi sa wearing all white with your superfood bowl, I would still be loving you just as much today.
It's because we have that connection. We went deep right away. We never held back, you know, and we share the deep interest for, and this is something that we talked about it briefly at the very start. There are qualities to that core five. There are qualities to those people. There's two things that you mentioned now too. It's, and you read it at the beginning. It's, we're not expecting the core five to be who they are today, who they were yesterday.
Right.
We are excited that they're changing. We're excited that they're transformed. We're excited that there is something new, that I could be surprised with them constantly. And I'm so surprised. We're constantly surprising each other with the shit that we're doing with our
lives. I know.
And like, and that's so beautiful.
I'm a mom now, you guys. And you guys are like, cool.
It's like, you know, epic. Like, how amazing is that? That we get to have a little, you know, this little munchkin nugget that I can't wait to squeeze, you know?
What I think, why I think people need to read this book is because we know statistically that a lot of us are not experiencing the depth of connection that is like food, right? And so we're looking to social media, we're looking to work out more, we're looking to work more, we're looking to drink more, whatever it is, because we're actually hungry for something deeper. And so what I love about your book is that it's helping us to identify how we can get fed from the relationships and friendships that are currently in our lives. And we can choose to either go deeper with them or to identify and discern that certain ones just aren't going to feed us, so that we stop being in the cycle of eating the empty calories, consuming the connections that aren't feeding us. And this is important, even for me here, to go, wait, instead of reaching out to 25 different friends in my phone, can I go deeper with my five? Because those are the ones that are going to be with me when I die, I hope, right? Or going to come when I need them. And I think this book helps us to not only identify who are these people, why do I feel lonely, how do I stay in the tough places in a relationship, how is this a part of my spiritual path, but to cultivate this as a life practice, which I just think is so important. So I'm happy to ask myself these questions. I say that genuinely. It's like, I'm happy to remind myself, oh, I actually need to go deeper with the people I love instead of spread myself too thin, because that's what I'm really hungry for.
Mm-hmm. And one simple thing to do is go on your favorites on your phone and do the 15.
Right.
You know, and then look within those 15, who are the five? But have the 15 there.
Right.
Be aware who the 15 people are. And then and the 15, send them a note once in a while. Let them know thinking of you.
Right.
You know, make a connection. Stay in contact.
Do you put your parents in the 15?
Yeah.
Okay. Parents are included in the 15.
Yeah.
Children or... Yeah. I'm not calling my
the children and partner are within the five, though.
Oh, my God. So I just had another spot taken in my five?
I mean, yes, essentially. Lua is going to be, yeah.
Yeah, she's a baby now, so she's still. She's
yeah. Still. You've got another, you've got another maybe like 10, 15 years with her in that state.
In that. But I think that's important for everybody, like you said, make that like the first step as really just sitting and identifying that. And then go deeper with the book, because you got to ask a lot more questions. You got to make sure you're putting the right people in there. You got to examine a lot more pieces to the equation. Why? So that we don't all fall into this loneliness epidemic where we're just looking for a fast connection on our phone and we feel empty after, because that is not what we want for society or our children. Yeah.
And I have the context of the work in the hospital, which is so sad to see how many people are going through these real serious illnesses or towards the end of their life. And there is either no one next to them or one person.
Yeah.
It's so alarming to see how many people go through the hardest seasons of their life alone because they never prioritize connection. They prioritize money. They prioritize stuff.
Right.
And pretending that any of these things were going to... The false narrative is this. We think that we don't have friends because we're not there yet. Oh, I need to have this car. I need to live in this zip code. I need to have this amount of money. Then I'm going to make the friends that I want. Then I'm going to have the friends that I want. And then we're going to do all the fun things together. But what if you strip that away? What if you actually looked right here in your life right now that there's people who actually want to be your friend? There are people that want to go deep with you. You're just in this hungry, capitalistic God living in your altar, pushing you to accumulate more, to hoarder more, to do more. And you're missing the plot that like none of these things are actually going to support you to feel worthy enough that then that will help you to actually like reach out and engage with people.
Yeah.
What if you stopped pretending that's what you need to, that's what it's going to get you the best friends, the good friends that you want for your life. What if you prioritize connection? What if you really made a huge effort to connect with people every day, the same way you're eating every day? What if you made an effort to connect with people? And the last thing I want to say, though, about this, there's a big section in a book, not too big, but, you know, I speak in detail about this, but being socially integrated, like engaging with people around you. When you are moving into a new building, for instance, I played music really loud the other day here. And then I had a note from one of my neighbors on the left side, but I didn't know if it was the left neighbor. I thought it was either of the left or the right neighbor. So I went to a fancy grocery store here in LA, to Erewhon, bought two vegan chocolate sugar-free cakes, and I knocked on both doors and I said, "Hi, I'm so sorry about the music. I do this a couple times a month, and sometimes I do it a little longer, a few times a year." Explain to them. They're like, "Oh my God, no worries at all. Thanks so much for the cake." The other one, who actually is the one who left the note at my door, didn't answer the door. So I came home, wrote a front and back page letter to them explaining, taped it to their door with the cake, left it there. Have they replied to the letter? No. But guess what? I am making an effort to be socially integrated. Yes. I'm making an effort to get to know my neighbors. I'm exercising the muscle of connection. Yes. I am trying. How many times we don't try? How many times we go to the same coffee shop every day and we do the, "Hello, how are you? Good, fine, bye."
Right.
We don't even know that the coffee shop, the person who's making your drink every single morning, that person has dreams and aspirations, and a mother who's perhaps sick and they've been trying to get pregnant or whatever it is. Everyone's got a full life, and you get to participate in knowing that they are human with a full experience too. That is going to help you to exercise your muscle and realize the most important thing we have in our lives is our community, is our friends. All of it will fade away. All of it will, like, none of it will make sense. We can experience joy by ourselves. And it's like an experience. Oh, wow, I got the job. Oh, wow, I got the part. Oh, wow, I got the callback. Oh, wow, he likes me back. Or whatever.
Yeah.
It's another thing for you to experience the joy with someone else.
Yeah.
Joy shared is doubled, right? When we are experiencing sorrow or pain or grief or whatever, and we do it, and we have, there's someone else with us, it dissolves the hook a little bit.
Yeah.
It's shared. So people can help us to unburden ourselves when we are together, you know? So you could do all the things you want and be in your big high rise tower, drive your fancy car. But if you don't have friends, honey, if you don't have people around you.
And real friends, and the people that are going to come bring you soup when you're sick.
Literally.
You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. That's the difference. So I am so excited for this book. I'm excited for people to read it. It is a timely book. It's a really, 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 really important right now on this planet. And everybody go get Saw's book, follow Saw online, do his practices, go on his retreats. You know, I'm sure you
focus on the book. Just get the book.
I told you to get the book.
That's the most important. Yeah.
But I hope you're also in a room with this man at some point, because you will have a beautiful experience with the light of his soul. Thank you so much. I love you so much. Thank you for sharing your wisdom.
I love you too. Thank you, everybody, for being here and listening.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Before you go, I want to offer you some questions for contemplation, integration, and writing, if you wish. The first one is to consider: was there something in today's episode that touched you or moved you or triggered you? An image, an idea, a story? Take a moment and just think about it. Is there anything that provoked you, that reached inside of you, that perhaps brought up a memory or an idea from your life? What in this episode inspired you? Was there something that surprised you, that stood out for you? Could you jot it down just to remember? Maybe it was a concept or something that the guest said that brought you to some new awareness. Was there something about this episode that upset you, that provoked you, that pissed you off? Giving yourself full permission to dive into that. Was there anything about this episode that soothed your soul, that helped you feel a little bit more belonging, a little bit more at home, a little bit less like you're the only one? Taking those questions into your heart or into your journal or into your day. If anything stood out that you want to share with me, please do so on social media, direct into my DMs. I'd love to hear what touched you, what moved you, and what you're taking from this time together. And if this episode truly inspired you in some kind of way, share it with a friend. like, subscribe, and write a review. It means a lot to me. Thank you. So happy you're here with me, daring to feel.